It's time! Hey, Dave, listen up, please!
Scotty, that's a great question. I got a question for you, though, Scotty. You know that there's other players on our team besides Desi.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know. Something amazing.
Jones for three. And he banks it in.
Bailey. Up and in and a chance for three.
Welcome into the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. I am Seth Campbell, joined by Scotty Bordelon. We are a few days later this week, but we wanted to give the chance to Razorbacks to play another game, get you prepared for the SEC Big 12 Challenge. The Razorbacks on a streak, the first time under Eric Musselman, they have won three games in a row, or three SEC games in a row. Big win over Ole Miss last night. Ole Miss didn't shoot the ball very well, especially from three, only making one. But the Razorbacks, they did what they had to do on both sides of the ball to get the 74-59 win. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Desi Sills' toughness, because I mean, you can't go an entire podcast without talking about Desi Sills and his toughness. And really kind of the outlook for the Razorbacks now. Justin Smith back healthy, some other things. Jalen Tate really seems to be coming into his role. All it takes is for Scotty and I to badmouth him here on the Basketball Podcast of America, and then he turns into an NCAA all-caliber player. So who are we going to badmouth this week, Scotty, that can turn into a big player next week? We'll get to all of that and more here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. But let's start looking at the schedule. Big picture, I know it's the end of January, but you can never be too early in looking at the tournament, the ultimate goal for every team that plays college basketball. Scotty, when you look at Arkansas' schedule now, they kind of did what we said they might do going into this stretch of the schedule. They lost the two games that were tough on the road, or one of the, both of them on the road, but then came back and beat the teams that are beatable. And that Auburn win keeps looking better and better after Auburn beat Ole Miss. But they beat Auburn, or pardon me, not Ole Miss, they beat Missouri. They beat Auburn, they won at Vanderbilt, they beat Ole Miss. Things seem to be going in the right direction for the Razorbacks.
Yeah, for sure. And that Auburn win is going to, like, keep getting better, better and better. It's like you said, they beat Missouri earlier in the week. Sharif Cooper was awesome again. They closed that game really well. I've seen some talk that Auburn might be better than Missouri, even though Missouri was like a top 15 team at the time. I think if Auburn plays well, they're a top 25 team. So Arkansas having that win, and you know, the win at Auburn isn't as impressive, you know, obviously because they didn't have Sharif Cooper, but that's a win that's going to look really, really good. Arkansas has got to, you know, take advantage of some quad one games that are coming up on their schedule, and Oklahoma State is that's a great opportunity for Arkansas to just – I think people are seeing that Arkansas has improved, but they also see that the teams that Arkansas have beaten lately, especially Vanderbilt and Ole Miss, like, aren't terrific teams. So those aren't particularly feathers in your cap or whatever. But Oklahoma State is I think it's a winnable game. Like, it's not like you're going to Gallagher Iowa when it's jam packed. Arkansas felt that wrath a few years ago when they went down there and got their brains beat in. That's a game that I think if Arkansas wins or competes really well, and I think that's going to give people a little bit more hope, you know, as Arkansas enters the back half of the SEC schedule with a couple of very winnable home games, probably games that you have to win. And then because the schedule after that gets really tough, like it's at Kentucky, at Missouri, Kentucky and Missouri, like they have their warts and whatnot, but those are still road games. And then you get Florida at home. And then your last three games are Alabama and LSU in Fayetteville, and then South Carolina on the road. So I think you just need to, I guess the confidence just needs to keep snowballing. And I think a pretty good performance on Saturday at Oklahoma State would go a long way in that.
This game against Oklahoma State isn't a must win. You're not in that situation yet. I thought that for NCAA tournament hopes that a few of these games this past week were must wins. And, you know, Musselman's not going to put that pressure on his team. And a lot of people weren't going to talk about it, but you got to win the games that you are favored to win at home. And then you got to beat the worst team in the league on the road to keep yourself in the conversation, especially after dropping two very, very pitiful looking games. Arkansas did that. Arkansas has put themselves back in position. Now they're doing what they're supposed to do. They're beating the teams that they're supposed to beat. Now you would like to see them maybe be able to beat a few teams that they're not supposed to beat, and that would put them comfortably into the bracket. Right now they're hanging around, you know, just those last four byes in the NCAA tournament. They're in, but they're just hanging awfully close. I don't want to put too much pressure. If I was Musselman, I wouldn't want to put too much pressure on my team here at Oklahoma State. And in the grand scheme of things, maybe this game doesn't matter in SEC standings-wise and down the stretch, but I believe this game against Oklahoma State is vitally important to the Razorbacks. And here's why. So quadrant one win. Oklahoma in the NET rankings, I think we looked this up earlier, Scotty. They are 38. Oklahoma State, sorry. They are 39. Oklahoma State, 39. So you beat them on the road. For those that don't know, a quadrant one win is beating a team that's ranked in the top 25 in the NET rankings at home, a team that's ranked in the top 50 at a neutral site, and a team that's ranked in the top 75 at their place. So on the road, that gives you a quadrant one win. Arkansas has an opportunity to get one of those against Oklahoma State, and it can set you up, if you are the Razorbacks, it can set you up for the rest of the season. All of a sudden, you beat Oklahoma State, you have the confidence for a quadrant one win. You've won four in a row, and like you said, Scotty, there are two very winnable games after that with Mississippi State and Texas A&M, both at home, and you have that opportunity to win six straight games, five straight SEC games, and you've kind of put yourself in some cushion. I think this game with Oklahoma State will be the deciding factor between Arkansas being a bubble team throughout the rest of the year or being a team that can, you know, get a 7-8-9 seed in the SEC, in the NCAA tournament. Now, things can happen. Arkansas can go on a run. I get that. You know, they can beat teams that they're not supposed to beat. But looking at the schedule, games that Arkansas has a good chance in and games that Arkansas doesn't, I think Oklahoma State is a pivotal game.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I was just looking at their schedule. I mean, this is a team that Kansas didn't go into Oklahoma State and win. And just last Saturday, Oklahoma State was playing without Cade Cunningham, who's their do-everything freshman, and they were tied with Baylor with like 10 or 12 minutes to go, and then they fell apart, and I think they lost by 15 or 16 points. But that's a tough team. I think this is a game that you're really glad that you've got your team dad back with Justin Smith. Like, he stabilizes so much for Arkansas. Like Musselman has said, like, you don't have to worry about him defensively. And because he's strong enough, physical enough, he's going to pretty much hold his own every night with his matchup. And offensively, like, you can't put a price on the value that he brings offensively, just going and grabbing misses. And he even brings value, I think, when he doesn't even grab offensive rebounds, but he's battling for them. And just his presence makes opposing players, you know, just, I don't know, maybe makes a couple of guys go for the rebound, but they ended up knocking the ball out of bounds. Arkansas gets another possession and they get points out of that. That's really important. But I think the Oklahoma State game's winnable. I think you've got to have pretty complete games from some guys that have been a little bit up and down. Like, Desi's been up and down. Mostly he's been so-so since the second Auburn game. Moses Moody, his scoring dipped against Auburn the second time around. Played really well at Vanderbilt. Was kind of really strong. I think he didn't hit his first shot against Ole Miss until really late in the second half. So you kind of want to get him going. But it was really good to see Connor Vanover too, just impact the game the way that he did on Wednesday. I think that's a confidence builder. And I'm curious to see just how – I just haven't watched just a ton of Oklahoma State, but if he matches up even semi-well against, you know, some of their forwards. I think he could make a really big impact. He could be a rim protector. You know, Cade Cunningham, he's going to be a guy that's going to want to put the ball on the floor, try to get to the rim. And they've got several really athletic guys that you know, Arkansas is going to have to keep in check. So Oklahoma State's a big game. I don't think it's necessarily a must win, but if you don't win, you need to be ultra competitive. And this is not a game that you can go in and lay an egg on national TV, because people are going to remember this game.
Yeah. Without a doubt, people are going to remember this game. You've got to look at the rest of Arkansas' schedule and figure out that what are the quadrant one wins left. And I think they showed it on the broadcast last night, but you have Oklahoma State left as a quadrant one game. Hilariously enough, Kentucky is a quadrant three right now.
It's killing Florida's resume right now.
Of course, if you look at Kentucky, I'm trying to find them here on the NET rankings. They've all moved up to 82. So what that means that Arkansas, if they can move up into the top 75, Arkansas could beat them on the road, and then that all of a sudden turns into a quadrant one. It goes from quadrant three to quadrant one. So quadrant three, because I believe Florida lost to them at home.
Right.
So there's opportunities for the Razorbacks to squeak out a few other quadrant one wins. We go down, Missouri's a quadrant one. Florida would be at home, so I don't think that would be a quadrant one win. Florida's on the edge. They're at 27, so you get a few more good showings from them. And then we continue down the Arkansas schedule. Texas A&M won't be. Alabama will be another opportunity. South Carolina won't be right now, but LSU is sitting at 34. So there's a few opportunities for Arkansas to get a few other quadrant one wins. Just important when it comes down to it at the end of the season. I think they said on the broadcast, the announcers, I can't remember who was doing the game, but they said that the eye test is going to be a little more important this year as well, because teams haven't played as many games, haven't played as many premier non-conference opponents to see how they do outside of the league. And Arkansas's eye test, I don't know about you, Scotty, but I would put it at iffy.
Yeah, they can be a tough watch sometimes. And I thought that's where last night's game was going for a little while. And then Devo just came off the bench and just went nuts, deflecting passes, stealing passes, finishing at the rim. He was so efficient. He finished 5 out of 6 shots at the rim last night. He was really good. Anytime he can, I think that tells you a lot about Devo, is just when he's playing at his pace and he's not sped up, he finishes at the rim really well. But I think it's big for his confidence, because he's now put two pretty good games back to back. I think he was 3 of 3 from the floor against Vanderbilt. And one of the plays that I liked last night too was I think he finished an and one and missed the free throw, but he got his own rebound and then hit that short floater. That is Devo in a nutshell right there. But yeah, I think you get Moses Moody going again, I think this team becomes more aesthetically pleasing to watch, because I think sometimes, like when Moses doesn't have it going, Jalen Tate, as well as he's played in the last couple of games since I kind of ripped him on the last podcast, I think he can try to overcreate sometimes, and that can turn into some bad shots from him, some turnovers, that kind of thing. But they have to get their pieces playing well. And it would, I mean, one of the things I've liked about Arkansas in the last, you know, on their winning streak, is they've had guys like Moses struggled against Auburn. And I may have talked about this already, but Desi really stepped up, scored 20 plus. At Vanderbilt, Desi kind of fell back or kind of fell off, but Moses and Jalen Tate both went for 25. And then last night, Moses wasn't on his game again. Desi was okay. Like, he hit a three early and finished at the rim a couple of times. I'm glad he's okay after that fall. That made my heart jump.
Oh, man.
But Devo comes off the bench, gives him a big-time spark. And then JD Notte, too. Like, he scored, I think, 14 points in the second half, 19 for the game. And he only had 12 points in Arkansas's last three games. So that was big for him, I think. And he's, I think he, I think he could be a plus for you, like on the road in a tough environment against a pretty good defensive team in Oklahoma State. I think he can create in some pretty tough offensive possessions where nothing's really going for you. But I just like the fact that when a guy who you really count on has fallen off a little bit offensively, you've got other guys kind of rising to the occasion. That's the mark of a pretty talented team with some quality depth.
Oh, isn't it great to have depth? We mentioned this 800 times here on the podcast, but a complete
got
a
solid nine. I think you feel pretty solid with all nine guys that Musk is playing right now.
A complete opposite of what happened last year. You know, dreamers can dream, but you know, maybe Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe don't have such great years as they did last year. And then all of a sudden you could evolve them into the shooters they were. And then you have Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe on this team. I just don't think there's
not enough
shots to go around. All right, Scotty, let's dig in a little bit to the Ole Miss game before, you know, we've kind of looked ahead and it's probably backwards to do this, not great podcasting etiquette, but I wanted to get in off the top with Arkansas and the latest information. But looking back a little bit at the Ole Miss game, Arkansas's defense played pretty well, held Ole Miss to the lowest point total of the entire season. I wanted to go back last night as the game was going on. So I looked at their lowest point total from this season. But then I went back to last season. I was like, well, how long have they? Like, what is the lowest point total? Scotty, they scored 40 points, I think, four times last year. Talk about barf.
Ole Miss did?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a team that's really struggling offensively. Like, we knew, I think, going into Wednesday's game that Ole Miss was going to be tough because they defend really well. Like, on KenPom, they're top at the time. I think on whenever we talked to Eric Musselman, I guess it was Monday, Bob was wanting to do a story on Ole Miss's defense because they had just – I mean, they had given up 96 points in two games total, like to Mississippi State and Texas A&M. Granted, those are not the greatest offensive teams either, but they – for the most part suffocated those two teams, but they can't score. They really can't score. And I just did their shot charts. I just rewatched the game right before we started recording, and Ole Miss took more mid-range jumpers than they took shots at the rim. That is, I mean, call me new school or whatever, but you're not going to win many games with that kind of shot selection. It's not happening. I've never seen a team take more long twos and mid-range jumpers with their feet on the line, on the old three-point line.
Yes.
Like on the old three-point line than Ole Miss did on Wednesday. It's just, that's not the recipe to beat anybody.
You don't want to take women's three-pointers. You just don't.
I mean, those are women's twos. Like their feet are on the old 3-point line. Like,
oh, that's awful.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough. Like I'm 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I count at least 7 long twos, like with their feet on or around the women's 3-point line. It's ugly offense. And Ole Miss didn't hit a three until like midway point in the second half. They went 1 of 8 on the left wing. Missed all 5 of their corner threes, you know, 0 for 3 on the right wing. That's just a team that's just really bad offensively. But credit Arkansas. I think they posted their second best defensive efficiency rating in SEC play. I think the only one better was Georgia. Georgia's pretty inept on offense, but I would take Georgia to beat Ole Miss just because they have more than one reliable weapon on offense.
And Georgia is another one of those SEC teams that you're just like up and down and up and down. South Carolina coming out with a big W yesterday against Georgia, was it not? And it's just the SEC this year is confusing with the uneven games, amount of games played, the trying to figure everything out. Arkansas was in the bottom half of the league. Now they sit at 6th at 5-4, one above Kentucky. You know, you're literally one game away from being in the top 4. In getting a first round bye in the SEC tournament. So it's the SEC this year is wild. You know, Alabama sits four games ahead of anybody because they're three games ahead of LSU. It's that 9-0 and LSU 6-3, and then they hold the tiebreaker over LSU right now. So and Florida, which are both 6-3. So four games ahead. Alabama looks to be the class of the SEC right now. I think they'll drop a game or two eventually. Eventually, you can't hit all of your shots. You know, maybe you have an off night on the road, you don't come in focused. But Alabama will be a good team. Tennessee struggling to score the ball at times. They're ranked in the top four.
I don't like them because they don't score.
Yeah,
I don't have much faith in them. Like, they can defend like crazy, but they don't drive the ball intentionally, like with purpose. And it's like they put the ball on the floor to pass and not score. That just it's infuriating. It's kind of like a rock fight watching them.
They could be a team that could win a lot of games in the regular season, but come tournament time, when you look at them in a bracket, I don't feel comfortable picking them to win their very first game, even if they are a 3-4 seed playing, you know, 13, 14, anywhere around there. I'm still not very comfortable picking them because all you got to do is have for the other team, if you have a guy that can score points, then all of a sudden it's kind of like that Virginia UMBC in a moment with Virginia that one year that they were ranked number one, lost to UMBC that was the 16. Virginia plays defense. That's what they do. They couldn't score. And then UMBC all of a sudden went up early, 10, 12 to 2, whatever it was. And then you're looking at all of a sudden Virginia trying to push and press because they are down in a situation they don't normally find themselves in. And UMBC.
Yeah, they had to get out of their element just to try to climb back in it. But they're just not built offensively to come back from big deficits. And Tennessee is another team that likes to take 10 to 14 foot jumpers all the time. And it drives me crazy. Like, you need to get shots for Santiago Vescovi. And I think they're missing like a really reliable number two and number three option on the perimeter. I like Fulkerson and Eve Pons. Pons is really limited on offense too, though. And I don't know that you want to live on John Fulkerson post-ups. Like, that's not great. I think they're missing Springer. I can't remember his first name, but I think they've missed him lately. So maybe they get him back, they get going again. But
Jerry Springer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's George, isn't it?
Shoots the ball a little bit better.
No, that's a different, Blue Jays outfielder. Anyway.
But what did you think about Connor? Like, we on the last podcast, we did the Do You Believe game, and you asked if Connor would play 15 minutes in a game again. And then he played his second most minutes in a game against Ole Miss. I think he was out there for 29. And like before the Vanderbilt game, he had played 23 in over four games. He was awesome.
He was fantastic. And I think, again, like I said earlier, this is where depth comes into play. Arkansas can match up with a team like Ole Miss. Ole Miss is going to play their 1-3-1 defense, or they're going to, you know, and extend that out to, I think they were saying yesterday, it's a 1-3-1 that can switch into a 2-3 and just depending. But I think Musselman's quote in the postgame press conference was spot on. Connor is 7'3". So you put him down in the corner and you can break a press, because if you get in trouble, you just throw it up to the guy that can basically reach up to 10 feet in the air. And he can pull the ball down. And he said, once you do that, the zone basically breaks down. They'll try and trap Connor in the corner, but all he's got to do is get it there, kick it back out, and then the trap is done. And you're basically playing half-court defense from there. So I thought that he was very valuable. He was making plays on the defensive end. He was hitting shots. You would like to see him be able to hit, you know, maybe one of those three-pointers that he took. He ended up hitting one after a foul was called. But that's the type of game Connor Vanover can thrive in. Alabama? Probably not. But that's the beauty of having depth. You'll know throughout the rest of the season who you can match up with and who you can put Connor in. But the unknowns, when you get into the tournament, if you get into the tournament, maybe you match up against a team like an Ole Miss that won a lot of games this year because they can press. And you can break the press because you can play Connor. Musselman has bullets in his gun this year. And he used one against Ole Miss, and it worked out very well. I thought Connor played a fantastic game, and he really excelled at his role.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And he had the quote of the night. I thought after the game, he said, "I love blocking shots. Being able to take something from someone and send it somewhere else is great." I love that. That was a little bit of swagger coming from Connor.
He literally went up and took one from some guy out of the air.
All the way from Romello White. That was really impressive. And that, I mean, at the same time, not to slight Connor's block in any way, but that was a pretty sad attempt at a shot. Like, you're not going to try to leave your feet and get a hook shot up over a 7'3" guy with a 9'8" reach. Like, that's, like I said, that's Ole Miss and, you know, just not having very many offensively gifted dudes. But Romello White was solid at Arizona State. I don't know what he was thinking right there. That was – that play was just kind of – I just kind of shook my head. I was like, one, that's a terrible shot. What do you think you're trying to do? Shooting a hook shot flat footed against a 7'3" guy. And then Connor just ripped it away. I mean, I think we're seeing the last couple of games, his confidence is growing a little bit. If he gets his perimeter shot back, he's going to be dangerous for this team down the stretch. You know, they play several of the teams that they play several of the teams for a second time that Connor didn't play much against or well against in the first half of the SEC schedule. So I'm interested to see, how he figures into those game plans again. But if he can't play, I think we're seeing that Jalen Williams is more than capable of stepping in and providing you some quality minutes. So it's not like you're wondering, what are we going to do? Like, we can't find a solid matchup for Connor. What are we going to do? Like, you throw Jalen Williams out there. And I wish Jalen – I'm starting to get frustrated with Jalen over one thing. He is still hesitant to shoot the three. And if he pulls at least one a game, maybe two or more, then defenses are going to have to start reacting to him differently. And then he's going to be almost impossible to guard because he can put the ball on the floor too. Like, you remember the Auburn game, he catches a sideline out of bounds pass, goes behind his back, finishes really nicely with his left hand. And then at Tennessee, we saw him finish twice at the rim off the bounce. He's more than capable, and he's got a mid-range jumper in his back too. Pulled that out against Tennessee. I just want him to pull from the perimeter just a little bit more than we're seeing right now, because he's still hesitant even after he knocked down that big three against Auburn. He's more than capable of doing it. And Musk said they see it a lot behind closed doors. I just want to see it when the lights are on. That would be fantastic, because he would become such a tough cover.
In case you're wondering, going back, Jaden Springer for Tennessee.
There you go. Not Jerry.
No, not close. Or George. George is a outfielder for the Blue Jays. Anyway, I think that what you said is exactly right. Jalen Williams can be a dynamic threat for the Razorbacks. I think when you look down the roster, there are a few guys that you're just not worried about. Moses Moody going through a funk right now, I'm just not worried about him. Moses Moody is too elite of a scorer to let that get to him. He's too elite of a player to let that get to him. Guys that are crucial, I think, for the Razorbacks down the stretch, if they want to be a for sure tournament team, I think that they've got to have more production from Desi Sills. Desi's got to be a threat to drive to the basket, but he's also got to be a threat to pull it up and be able to make some jumpers. He can, and he's shown that he can, but there's also been times this season to when you just hold your breath when Desi pulls up because it hasn't gone in very well. So I think this team ebbs and flows with Desi Sills, but also having Justin Smith back, I think, opens up roles for Williams. It opens up roles for Vanover and gets those guys to where they don't have to play outside of their comfort zone. So I think that Smith every single day has gotten better. I think he looks basically now like the Smith before the surgery. Musselman even said post game after Ole Miss that they thought they rushed him back for the Alabama game.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, he didn't give you much of anything against Alabama, except for a warm body and a dunk to start the second half. That was pretty much it. But I think you're right. Like, I think as far as consistency, I think you need to continue to get solid play. Like, I don't from Jalen Tate. I don't think he has to be great every night, but he needs to be really consistent because he's the primary ball handler. He's initiating offense. He's making everything go. And, you know, we talked a lot about those assistable passes that I'm tracking, and Jalen is like by far and away the leader in that stat. Against Alabama and LSU, he had 12 total potential assists, 6 in each game, which is, it's not great. 3 games since, he's had 9, 10, and 8. That's more like it. And even though he only had, I think, 2 assists, maybe 3 assists against Ole Miss, he still had 8. Like, he was getting other guys involved. And that doesn't even take into account, like, the baseline out-of-bounds plays where he's finding teammates for potential layups. They get fouled, they go to the free throw line, get points that way. I mean, his passing is just so vital. And I love that he's given Arkansas a boost from the perimeter too. Like, I think he's hit, I would have to double check this, but he's hit 7 threes in his last 3 games. I think his sophomore season, he hit 8 for the entire year. So his perimeter shooting has given Arkansas a boost in a couple of games where Moses Moody hasn't been able to provide it, you know, against Auburn and Ole Miss. That's pretty big. I think you obviously need to get Moses back on track. Justin Smith's going to be steady for you. And I think you need to get decent play from Desi Sills, like you mentioned, and JD Notte too. Like, JD was pretty quiet offensively for 3 games, scored like 12 points over 3 games, and then he goes for 14 in the second half last night or against Ole Miss. That's big time. Like, you got to get him going offensively.
JD Notte, to me, last night against Ole Miss, I'm watching the game, and all of a sudden I look at the box score, and I went, wait, he has how many points? And he was the leading scorer. I don't know how he did it. It was almost quiet in a way, if you can be the leading scorer and be quiet about it. But that's what JD Notte did. He hit shots. Musselman said he thought his shot selection was better. He ended up putting up the most shots on the team, which I think is going to become a recurring stat for him if it hasn't already. But yeah, he surprised me last night with just the fact of, oh shoot, all of a sudden, yeah, Desi is up. Or not Desi, sorry. JD's the leading scorer.
Yeah, and one of the things I liked about JD too is he's one of the better, he's probably the best fouls drawn guy on the roster. And he drew 5 last night, and I don't think he committed one. I could be wrong, but yeah, he didn't commit a foul, and he drew 5, got to the line 9 times. That's what you want to see. Like, I still think a couple of the shots that he took you could probably do without, but that 3 where he just kind of danced with that thing at the top of the key and then, you know, banged home a 3, that was really good. That was him in a rhythm, and I think that was him, you know, possibly getting a little bit of his groove back. I think Arkansas is going to need his offense down the stretch, you know, as they go into Oklahoma State. Like I said, I think he can create some offense when things break down, if that happens. And, you know, Arkansas, like I said earlier too, like, they're going to start facing – some of the teams that they've already played once, like Alabama and LSU. He needs to be, you know, a little bit more cognizant of his shot selection. And, you know, I thought against Vanderbilt, he did a pretty good job, not a great job, but a better job of dribbling with his head up. Like, I remember he drove baseline one time and he found Jalen Tate for a 3 on the right wing. Like, he can't, like, anytime he puts the ball on the floor, he can't be thinking score 100% of the time. Like, he is such a good scorer, and he's so good around the rim. He's going to draw attention. Your teammates are going to be open. And a guy like Jalen Tate, you can't hesitate to pass the ball to him on the perimeter because he's shooting so well from 3 right now. Same with Moses. You know, he's struggling a little bit from 3 in SEC play. He's such a big piece of this team. If he can get going again, that's going to be big time.
You know, you look at Arkansas' schedule, they've got 4 games left against teams that they will only play once. Mississippi State, Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina. And then they've got 5 games against teams that they will play twice. Texas A&M twice, Alabama, LSU, and then Missouri. So you're going to have to see how they adjust a little bit the second time they play those teams, which will be interesting.
I like Arkansas' chances against Missouri with Justin Smith.
Yeah.
I like their chances there because, I mean, you can send extra attention at Jeremiah Tillman if you feel like you need to with whoever he's matched up on. with, I mean, send Justin Smith and Connor Vanover at him, Jalen Williams, Justin Smith at him. I like Arkansas's chances there, even if it is on the road.
I like Arkansas's chances. This is going to sound surprising. Alabama, LSU, I like Arkansas's chances in both of those. They're not going to be favored against Alabama for sure. They might be favored against LSU. That would be kind of depends, because that's the second to last SEC game of the season. So you'll have to see how they, what each team is doing when it comes to them. But if you want to get into a three-point shootout, now that Arkansas has somebody that can defend the rim and run with Justin Smith being fully healthy, I think that I'm going to go out on a limb and say that that game is going to be close regardless of what happens. I just think that Arkansas can match up a little bit with Alabama. Now, Arkansas's three-point defense was better against Ole Miss, without a doubt, but that may be something to do more with Ole Miss than Arkansas's three-point defense. But Musselman had a way last year to get them to defend the three, and I have a feeling that this year, the second time they play Alabama, they're going to sell out to defending the three and forcing Alabama to take mid-range jumpers.
Force them to take some of those Ole Miss jumpers.
Mm-hmm. Or at least make them pump fake and not be set and shoot the first three, you know, get the ball and shoot it. Instead, have to put the ball on the floor once. And that may not work out well, you know. Talking to Mike Dabers this week, he was talking about the UConn game, which is a big matchup. And he was like, he knows a guy at a smaller school, a non-Power 5 school. But he was like, listen, our best option, where there weren't any good options against UConn, he said, but our best option was to let us run. So we were going to run. And then he said, so we ran with them, and they put up, I think he said 90 points in the first half, which might be in
the first half.
Yeah, which might be a little of an exaggeration, but you know, that might be Arkansas's option. Is there's not a great option against Alabama, but this is the one that we're going to sell out with, and we'll see what happens. Alabama could shoot Arkansas out of the building and score 120 points, or they could go cold and Arkansas could stay in the game. All right, Scotty, we're going to move on. New segment here. Things Desi Sills is tougher than. There is, if you are on Twitter or on Arkansas Razorbacks Twitter, there is a guy that mentions Desi Sills is a tough guy, and he uses an analogy that we are not sponsored by them, so we're not going to bring up their name, some food chain. But it did get me thinking, Scotty, that there are multiple things that we could say that Desi Sills is tougher than. He showed us yesterday after going up for a dunk, which was really impressive, by the way. Nice little in-transition slam. But then all of a sudden his legs just kept carrying and carrying and carrying until they were no longer underneath him. And then gravity took over and Desi Sills started falling towards the ground. And he basically belly flopped from where his body was, probably 8 feet in the air onto the hardwood floor.
It was scary.
It was. And that's not the only injury. We'll get into another guy that deserves a tougher than Desi Sills. Things Desi Sills is tougher than a shout out as well. We'll get to that. But I started thinking, Scotty, some of the things that Desi Sills is tougher than. You're welcome to join in if you have any. But Desi Sills, that dude is tougher than the kernels at the bottom of an unpopped or of a popped popcorn bag. You know, the ones that don't pop at the bottom and you're just grabbing a handful of popcorn, you throw it in your mouth, you start chewing, and all of a sudden your teeth hit that kernel that didn't pop. Crunch. Desi Sills, tougher than that. Let's see. Other things that I thought of. Desi Sills is tougher than the trailer hitch that you hit your shin on. An unpadded trailer hitch. It's just on the back of a truck or back of a car or whatever. You're going around. You don't even see it. It just hits you right in the shin, causing you to want to say every cuss word that you ever have heard of. Like, I don't know what it is, but you could probably cut off a finger and it wouldn't hurt as bad as getting hit in the shin by a trailer hitch. But Desi Sills is tougher than that trailer hitch.
Yeah, I was going to say he's tougher than Devontae Shuler's head, which chipped Jalen Tate's tooth. So that's what I'm going to go with this week.
The other tougher shout out is Jalen Tate has a chipped tooth. We'll have to talk to him eventually whenever we get him next about his chipped tooth and what they did with that. Because
oh, dude, it was gross.
Musselman said that he just shoved it back up in the gum. Which I don't understand. If you chipped the tooth, the part of the tooth that should still be there should be still in the gum, right? But if he lost
maybe,
it,
maybe it was a little bit loose, which I don't want to get into the details or whatnot. But I mean, yes. You saw my reaction last night on the Zoom when Musk said they just kind of shoved the part that wasn't chipped off back in his gums. I think I mentally checked out after that.
Scotty put his hands up to his head and went, "What?" Wide-eyed. It was a little interesting. I must admit, I was like, okay, interesting. Let's see, Scotty. Those are really the only two that I brought forth today for the production meeting. But I think that there are multiple things that Desi Sills is tougher than. But our fandom of Desi Sills, especially yours, Scotty, having an entire segment dedicated to him, I thought would be nice.
Tougher than a weekend at the in-laws. No offense to my in-laws, I love them to death. I enjoy going to see them. So I wasn't talking about them specifically.
Desi Sills tougher than a frozen lake. Tougher than the freaking cold mornings of Northwest Arkansas with the wind blowing in your face.
Yeah. Whew,
those will get you.
Tougher than the 25-degree walk back to your car after a game. I mean, you walk from Bud Walton to Lot 56 when it's 25 and the wind's blowing. That's not fun. That's pretty tough. But Desi's a little bit tougher than that.
Yeah. My first experience, I was a freshman in college. It was about end of September, beginning of October. I'm walking just on campus, and my RA comes up, and we're like, man, it's just a beautiful day outside. You know, Fayetteville, it's like 70, 75. Wind is got that slight breeze to it. And you're like, man, I love living in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And my RA comes up and he's like, and we were talking about it. And he's like, yeah, this is really great. Just wait until the winter. And we went, what do you mean? He goes, you feel that wind that's blowing right now? Yeah, it doesn't stop. And we were like, oh. And then my freshman year, my first semester, I realized then that I would never take another 8 a.m. class because waking up in December to walk to class at 7:30 a.m. when it's 32 degrees outside, the wind blowing in Fayetteville, Arkansas, is just not a good time. I was over it. I got
another one. Desi Sills is tougher than a 7:30 a.m. public speaking class your freshman year.
Ooh, Scotty, you speaking from experience?
I am. I really am. That was a tough semester.
Man, Desi Sills, that is one tough guy. He is tough indeed. So we'll bring this segment back.
Craziest thing about it was he fell on his midsection from 8 feet up, and he just like immediately popped up.
Yeah.
And then they had to stop the game for him, or he probably wouldn't have come out immediately.
Yeah, you're exactly right. He would have stayed in the game. Musselman said he just got his breath taken out, knocked the breath out of him after the game. But all right, Scotty, before we wrap it up here on the basketball podcast of Mid-America, the Razorbacks have taken care of business in their last three games. I want to get your opinion on a three-game win streak. Has your outlook of the Razorbacks changed since before SEC play? Because I don't want to – there are the ups and downs of the SEC schedule, where there were the downs after the LSU and Alabama games, and then there's been some ups here recently with the three straight wins. But before all of those things happened, Justin Smith is still healthy. Your expectations for the Razorbacks before they started SEC play to what they have done at 5-4 right now, I believe, at conference. Yeah, 5-4. How do those two things compare?
I think they're similar in a way. I think I would feel more confident in the team right now than at the tail end of the non-conference schedule or the pre-conference schedule, if Connor Vanover was shooting the three a little bit better or was more of an offensive weapon than he has been. I think I would feel more confident, but still slightly more confident in this team. Like, I think Justin Smith is – I remember saying before the season started, you know, he averaged like 10-5 at Indiana. I think I said he was probably going to finish somewhere in that same range, like maybe 11-6, 11-7. But it's probably going to look more impressive for Arkansas just because he's so valuable and he's a much needed part of what they are. I think Jalen Tate shooting a three a little bit better is is an encouraging sign. I don't know that he's going to sustain it because he hasn't really shown throughout his career that he can sustain, you know, solid perimeter shooting. But I'm pretty confident in this team, and I don't want to get too high after I think one of the three wins that Arkansas got on this win streak is a solid win. Like the other two are like you needed those, but you got one that you needed, and they're just playing with, Eric Musselman likes to say, effort, energy, and enthusiasm is what his Arkansas teams are going to play with almost every night. For a week, they didn't play with any of that. And, you know, late in the first half against Auburn, they started playing with all of that, and it's carried over. If they can play Oklahoma State tough and possibly win that game, then the outlook, I think, it's brand new. And I think you start feeling the excitement, you know, as you get into February. That's when the big games start. Because not that every game isn't big, but in February, that's when you start getting down to the nitty gritty, figuring out who's a contender, who the good teams are, or who's a pretender that's just, you know, maybe not as good as we thought. Arkansas could turn out to be that, but I don't expect it. I think they've got enough pieces to contend with even the best teams in the league. Like, I don't expect Arkansas, when they play Alabama, to lose by 30 again. Like, they're going to be a lot more competitive. I think they're going to be really competitive in the back half of the schedule, the SEC schedule. So I'm still pretty high on this team. Like, they've got their warts and, you know, some weaknesses and that kind of thing, but overall it's pretty good club, especially when they, you know, when they play with passion and they look like they want to be on the floor with each other. That's a big deal.
You mentioned February, Scotty. Arkansas last year, just to kind of put things into perspective, during a normal year, Arkansas was a shoe-in for the NCAA tournament at the beginning of February. Now, some things happen in February. Isaiah Joe goes out, and the team kind of has to restructure. But how Arkansas went from basically a shoe-in to the NCAA tournament to they needed to win multiple games in the SEC tournament to get into the NCAA tournament was the fact of their February. If you go back and look, they won their first game at Alabama, but then lost their next five. They went 1-5 to start February. They ended up ending 3-6 in February. You want to put yourself out of the tournament? Go 3-6 in February again this year. And I think that you're exactly right. February sets you up for March, and it's an important month. Arkansas did everything they were supposed to do in the non-conference. They beat Georgia Tech. They beat Indiana. They lost to Western Kentucky, played a close game, and they were winning games in January. Beat TCU in the SEC Big 12 Challenge, came close against Kentucky. But when it comes down to it, February is where you make your money. Kind of like the whole you drive for show, putt for dough thing in golf. You play in, I guess that would be October through, or really November. They start November. You play November through January for show, and then you cash it home for dough in February.
Yeah, you're getting out of business now. This is when the league standings start to take shape, and this is when the casual basketball fan starts getting interested in college basketball. It's when the games in February start meaning more, and then you get into March. It's the same deal in February. Like, with each month, like, the games become more and more important. So, I mean, we could see this Arkansas team continue to like play good basketball, because I think the back half of the SEC schedule sets up fairly well for them. Like, they're the Mississippi State, Texas A&M at home, and then you go on the road to a Kentucky team that's kind of reeling, and so you don't feel like you've got no shot in that game. So, I mean, and then you got a chance for some revenge, you know, later in that back half. So, gonna be a fun finish. I'm excited.
Fun finish indeed. Football has a saying: they remember November. Didn't Mike Anderson have a saying?
I said his teams were like built for February and March, I think.
Yeah. Okay. they remember February. It just doesn't go as well.
Right.
He
said you want to be you want to be marching in March. I think that's what he said.
Yeah. Okay. That's tough. All right. Well, for Scotty Bordelon, I am Seth Gamble saying thank you so much for listening to us here on the Whole Hog Podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars wherever you are listening to us right now. Go ahead and share us with a friend as well. Scotty and I would greatly appreciate it. Help your friends to be informed. You can also hit us up on Twitter if you do not like our opinions, or if you do, you know, that's fine too. You don't have to be contrary on Twitter. Scotty is at NWA Scotty, spelled S-C-O-T-T-I-E. And I am at Seth Campbell 5. You can also hit up Whole Hog Sports at Whole Hog Sports on Twitter as well. And you can follow WholeHogSports.com for some amazing Razorback content. Can't get out of here though, Scotty, without mentioning big game for the Lady Razorbacks tonight, taking on UConn. I will be there. So stay tuned to Whole Hog Sports for all the latest updates. All right. As I said earlier, for Scotty Bordelon, I am Seth Campbell saying so long. We will see you back here next week.